G'day, Footyology listeners. Roko here. Enjoy our podcast? Well, you can become an official Footyology podcast supporter simply by using the supporter feature through Acast. There's no subscription or regular commitment, just the sheer satisfaction that comes with knowing you've kept the debt collectors from our door. No, just kidding. It does help, though. If you want to get started, you just need to follow the support this show link in the show description. Thanks again, and now let's get on with it.
Welcome to the Footyology Podcast with Rowan Connolly and Mark Fine.
G'day everyone, welcome to the Footyology Podcast. This is the Round 3 Review Edition minus the big Easter Monday Geelong Hawthorn clash. We'll have a full rundown of that in our midweek edition, but 8 games to discuss in vivid detail, and boy, some major jaw-dropping results among them, some thrillers, some beltings, unexpected beltings, some serious injuries to important players. This round has had a bit of everything. As I say, very good evening to my co-host, Mark Fine. What'd you make of all the drama and all the action, Finey?
Unpredictable, unbelievable at times, exciting for some fans, deflating for others. Football giveth, football taketh away. And on this holy weekend, I'm happy to quote verse, not that I know many, but I'm sure there's something in the Bible that says, expect the unexpected, something along those lines.
Yes, well, there's plenty of that going on. I'll tell you what you can always expect, and that is when you go to a certain establishment in Albert Park, you can expect nothing less than 100% quality of hamburger. What establishment would I be talking about, Finey?
Andrew's Hamburgers, Rowan, 144 Bridport Street, Albert Park. This is why bookmakers don't bet on hamburgers, because the winner is a certainty every time. And the bookmakers would take an absolute caning, no matter what odds they served up, because each and every time you line up burger against burger against burger, Andrew's Hamburgers comes out on top. No betting. It's not an option. They're the best burger. They're reliable. They're not unpredictable. You know what? In a way, they're not even exciting. They're just magnificent. You're not going to get upset. You're not going to get shocked. You're just going to get absolutely what you thought you were going to get, the best burger in town at 144 Bridport Street, Albert Park, Andrews.
Of course, officially voted the best hamburger in the universe by the Interplanetary Guild of Hamburger Judges. Recently, that was in the news a couple of days ago, if you missed that. Also being rewarded and awarded for their magnificence in home renovation is our magnificent friends at West Point Properties, Finey. Tell us about them.
I know Nick Bartels will be gleaming tonight because his Blues are on the board after a comfortable win against the Dockers. So it's a happy principal at the principal builders and renovators in the southeastern inner suburbs, Albert Park, Port Melbourne, South Melbourne, Middle Park. These are big ticket suburbs with really burgeoning house prices. So if you've got a block of land there, make the most of it with West Point Properties, Nick Spartels.
And of course, our other partner, Stats Insider, presenting the best data analysis in the caper on no less than 15 sports being played around the globe, including AFL football, of course. They preview an event 10,000 times to get the best possible assessment of the probabilities in terms of the result. And their website also has magnificent independent journalism. You can read myself there even, and you can read the likes of James Rosewarne too. It's all free for you, so check it out, statsinsider.com.au. All right, we've got a lot of games to talk about. Let's get right into it.
On Footyology, wrap around.
Well, it all started back on Good Friday Eve, Thursday evening at Marvel Stadium. What a game. Still buzzing about this. A really, really great contest between Collingwood and Brisbane. Collingwood leading for something like, I think it was over 90% of game time, but significantly not after the final siren. Zach Bailey clinching the points for the Lions with the fabled kick after the bell. The final scores, Brisbane 11-7-73, defeating Collingwood 11-6 72. The goal kickers, Joe Danaher with 3 for the Lions, missed a few as well. 2 to Charlie Cameron, singles to Bailey, Berry, Hipwood, McLuggage and Rich for the Magpies. 2 each to Majacek, Cox and Dacos, singles to DeGoey, Howe, Sidebottom, Sire and Thomas. What a drama-packed evening it was, finally. I was lucky enough to be there in the press box. And I'm mellowing a bit. I didn't go completely off my cruet, but I was a little animated at the finish, much to the consternation of some of those sharing the press box with me. It seems like a few days ago now. Well, it was a few days ago, but tell us your thoughts on that incredible result.
Not only, I mean, people sort of look at the week before where Brisbane were terribly unlucky to lose to Geelong by a point, see them get up by a point after the siren and say that the footy gods have sort of balanced up and they deserve the win. But I felt on the night they deserved the win, that they had enough of the ball. They just weren't quite the crisp Brisbane that we've seen over the last 2 years through the middle into the forward line. There was a bit of wastage there. I thought that Collingwood, even though they were in front, were ready to be taken for vast portions of the game. And you've got to give credit, really, to an undermanned ruck division. Now, we know that, now quite famously, because I think it's going to be oft-quoted, your question to Nathan Buckley, re-tap-outs and their effectiveness. I guess you're taking Nat Nui out of the equation, and the logic now is, who cares who wins the bloody tap-out? But what was it, 63-4?
It was 60-4.
Yeah, I mean, that's extraordinary. But you can follow up in a moment just exactly where you took that in the press conference. But they were very smart at the clearances and certainly seemed to be prepared and well-versed in what was going to happen when the ball was either thrown in or thrown up.
Well, I've been thinking about the ruck thing a bit, actually, and I know where Bucks is coming from, but it just feels like a bit of a get out to me. If you've got a ruckman that dominant, surely you can make more of the clearances. Now, they certainly didn't win the clearances handsomely. In fact, they actually lost the centre bounce clearances. So, as he pointed out, coaches can do a lot of good, you know, scouting work on the opposition. They can rove to the opposition ruckman. But Nick Natanui, for example, I mean, he wins his own clearances. But his hit-outs are pretty damaging as well. And it just, I don't know, this has been a recurring theme for Collingwood, that no matter how Grundy performs in the ruck, they don't seem to be able to capitalise on it enough. I think that they were at their best early, the Pies. Their defensive pressure really slowed down Brisbane's ball movement, and Brisbane is a much better team when it's taking the game on. And I tend to agree with you. The Lions really fluffed some chances towards the end. You know, you had Dane Zorko kicking out in the full, Marcus Adams with a silly handball to a teammate when they had a score begging their conversion. They just didn't seem destined to get over the line, but they kept plugging away. And I guess that's where you've got to really give them points so far this season, well, in the last two games anyway, that against both Geelong and Collingwood at stages, a less seasoned Brisbane outfit probably would have not thrown him a towel, but been resigned to defeat. And both those cases, they kept coming, and in both cases, probably should have ended up winning the game. Of course, how amazing that Bailey was the man who would have taken that free kick were it awarded down at Geelong, and did, of course, take the last kick of the game. One of the best post-siren shots to win a game I've seen, by the way. It did not deviate right over the goal umpire's hat. So kudos to Zach Bailey for that. Just quick one on the Pies. Where do we think the Pies are at? They were pretty impressive against Carlton. They were impressive for the bulk of this game. Are they tracking on course or about where we expected?
I think they're the one team that really is behaving as we thought. That is capable, but suffering when the ball is in the air in their forward line. I thought Harris Andrews and Marcus Adams owned the air, and there were a lot of intercept marks taken. Andrews was particularly good early. So Collingwood pre-season, we looked at that forward line and said, there's been no improvements there. Are they missing Treloar? Not noticeably, or Stevenson or Phillips? I still think that they're getting the work done through their midfield, but there does seem to be some firepower issues. And whilst they upped the ante in their good win against Carlton in terms of scoring, they were back to a more predictable 11 goals, I would say, at Marvel Stadium. I think that's where the problem is, Rowan. And also, just on roving to the opposition ruckman, I've heard that expression ever since I played junior football 40 years ago. Think it through. It doesn't really make sense. If a ruckman's good enough, he'll hit it away from opposition rovers. You know, you're only going to rove to the opposition ruckman to a point. He's not going to tap the ball to you, for goodness sake.
Well, maybe Brodie Grundy isn't the superstar that, you know, some make him out to be. And Bucks was certainly not dismissive, but he certainly seemed to imply that Grundy's biggest value was around the ground, which may well be the case. But, yeah, it's certainly going to spark some longer-term debate, I think, about the role of ruckman in modern-day football. But the end result, good win to the Lions, 11-7-73, defeating Collingwood 11-6-72. That was Thursday evening at Marvel Stadium. Good Friday. Unlike the old days when we didn't have any footy, we had two games on Friday. Let's talk about them. Well, Good Friday, twilight. It's North Melbourne that has pushed hardest for this fixture. And unfortunately, after a performance like this, I assume there'll be a lot of critics pushing for it to be taken away for them because they stunk it up. Admittedly, they were up against a very, very good side, but this was an embarrassing, shellacking victory going to the Bulldogs in the end by a mammoth 128 points. The final lopsided scores, the Western Bulldogs 25-17, 167, defeating North Melbourne with a paltry scoreline of 5-9-39. And the single headline act of this game, Josh Bruce, double figures, a 10-goal haul for Josh Bruce, 3 to Treloar, 3 to English, 2 to Norton and Dale, singles Lipinski, McNeil, Dunkley, Bontempelli and Scott for the hapless Ruse, 2 goals to Stevenson, singles to Hall, Larkey and Lazaro. Well, the Ruse stayed competitive for about a quarter, finally, and it was goodnight nurse after that. 5 goals to 1 in the second quarter, 6 goals to 4 behinds in the third, and then 10 goals to 2 in the last quarter. It was pretty ugly stuff by the finish, wasn't it?
Yeah, and they were seemingly aiding and abetting the record margin by the Bulldogs. The second half of the second quarter, where things really started to fall apart, North Melbourne played a key role in that because they were still getting some ball, but they were kicking it 10, 15 metres to the opposition off the instep, miskicking it, soft kicks, barely covering the ground and clearing the next man. It was nervous stuff, and in the end, it all imploded, didn't it? Young players looked underprepared for AFL football. Older players looked old, even though Ben Cunnington was good to have him back. He still knows how to get a clearance. Zeebel was doing some sheepdog work down in the back line, and otherwise, the forward line was non-existent. When you go with Larkey, who's really can't be a one-out forward at this stage, he's too vulnerable. And Lachie Young, you know, you're sort of scraping the barrel. From the Bulldogs' perspective, well, it wasn't just the Bruce show, was it? They got fantastic service again out of this power midfield, but it was Adam Treloar who stepped up with 3 goals that caught the eye, I thought, when the game was still alive. And the rest of the midfield were there. Dunkley more of a forward mid now than a genuine midfielder. That's how rich they are in that department. And, well, North can thank their lucky stars at Bontempelli. Did not have a stellar night. Otherwise, we might have been in the record all-time margin, looking at something very, very special. At least David Noble kept his job, Robin, because last time North lost like this or had a similar disastrous result, they sacked Wayne Schimmelbusch, didn't they?
That's right. They sacked Wayne Schimmelbusch pre-season. He didn't even get to the season proper back in 1993. Look, it was a belting. Zeebel was an interesting one because he was the subject of a fair bit of criticism from the commentators. Might have been David King, I think. They were quite critical of his, lack of leadership, they were calling it. I don't know how much more you can do in a situation like that where you just don't have the personnel. And on the question of personnel, more pain for the Roos, Jared Pollock tearing a hamstring, so you think he's going to be missing for a few weeks at least. Jed Anderson rolling an ankle. And they are two players they can ill afford to be without, given the paucity of senior and experienced talent in the works. As for the Bulldogs, well, it's just starting to gear up nicely for them. I didn't think they were overly impressive in round one, but looked pretty good since then. They are capable of a world of destruction. And Bruce is probably cream on the cake. I mean, certainly their biggest issues have probably been in terms of converting opportunities. If you've got Bruce firing, you've got Norton firing. And as I said last week, we still haven't even seen number one draft pick, Jamara Ugal-Hagan. So plenty in reserve for them as well. Looks like it's going to be a pretty good season for them. It could get uglier for the Roos, Finney. How ugly do you think?
Oh, they'll get a win here or there. You taught me that last year and you were spot on with Adelaide. Just with the Dogs, I prefer them with Jason Johannesson in the team. I know they resisted him for two rounds, but his run is still as damaging, even though it didn't mean that much, as ever. So good to see him back. I think that's a plus.
Both sides have some interesting games coming up next week. There's a ripper at Maher Stadium in Ballarat next Saturday afternoon with the Bulldogs taking on Brisbane. Of course, Brisbane hanging about in town for that one, whilst Queensland battles its corona issues. And an interesting one for North too. On Sunday afternoon, they take on Adelaide at Marvel Stadium. Of course, Adelaide playing much better than they were last year. Pre-season, you would have looked at this fixture and thought, well, this is one where the Roos might be able to get a win. They'll certainly go in underdog this time, but you'd still think if they are going to pinch a win here or there, this might be one of those games that is winnable. So it'll be a big weekend for both those teams. Right, that was the first leg of the Good Friday doubleheader. The second one played between Adelaide and Gold Coast. Let's have a chat about that. Well, it's been a great start to the new season by Adelaide. They are 2-1 now after three games. Of course, it took them most of last year to get a single win on the board. So already surpassing their performance in 2020. Only need one more win to equal their entire win tally for last season. And a terrific game in which Gold Coast certainly emerged with plenty of honour as well. 10-point win to the Crows in the finish, 14-11. 95, defeating Gold Coast 12-13, 85. That man, Tex Walker, the revitalised Taylor Walker, bobbing up with six goals. He now has 17 goals after three games. Two goals to Rowe, two to McAdam, singles to Berry, Schoenberg, Keys and McHenry. For Gold Coast, four to Ben King, two to Burgess, two to Holman, who came on as a medical substitute and had a real impact. Singles to Rankin, McPherson, Weller and Ellis. It was like a cross between Elliot and Benny Elias, the former Balmain rugby league player. Brandon Ellis, I mean, former Richmond premiership player. This is a cracking game. Five goals each at quarter time. Adelaide got a bit of a break in the second term. Gold Coast came charging back at the start of the last, but Adelaide finished stronger and ended up winning by that 10-point margin. What'd you make of this one, Finney?
Really enjoyed watching it. And I like the way that these two unfancy teams showed a bit of a dislike for each other, and it was spiteful at times. So they're not to be taken lightly, either of these teams. They played the game seriously like men on a mission, both sides. What an interesting last quarter in that what ultimately may have cost Gold Coast almost won them the game. It was sort of a conundrum, and that was losing Jared Witts, their only ruckman, which allowed the out-of-form Riley O'Brien to have some say in the last quarter, was always going to be costly, but it did bring Nick Holman onto the field, who kicked two great goals, took a great mark, and would have been the man to win them the game. So it was sort of bad news on one hand, good news on the other hand. It's very interesting how that substitution does work for injury. And with Nick Holman becoming a bit of a super sub, he's been sub three times and he's got onto the ground three times. As for Adelaide, I was really impressed by Keys in the last quarter, as I know you were, and very impressed by Jake Kelly, the man who got steamrolled by Paddy Dangerfield. I thought he had a great game. So, yes, usual suspects were there for them in the likes of Laird, Smith and Sloan, but much to like about both of these sides. And as far as Adelaide, I think they come here and beat North Melbourne next week. 3-1. Who knows where this jaunty run ends?
Yeah, look, it's fantastic to see. I mean, they really did finish last year with some very encouraging signs. Won three of their last four games, wasn't it? They actually won three in a row. So they've just really continued on. Obviously, had a great preseason. Gold Coast, again, they need a bit of luck, Gold Coast, just on the injury front. I mean, you lose Matt Rowell, now you lose Jared Witts. They are clearly the two players that could least afford to lose. So let's hope the prognosis on Witts is good. As you say, though, Gold Coast kicked three of the first four of the last quarter, two of them to Holman. They were dominating territory at one stage in the last quarter. The inside 50 count was 12-4 the Gold Coast way. But kudos to Adelaide for fighting back. Tex kicked his sixth of the game. Liam McHenry kicked what really was the sealer. Yeah, Ben Keys, he's been a great pickup for them. He was good for them last year too. And it's great to see guys who are sort of fringe dwellers at their former clubs become integral parts of a new club, particularly when they're not necessarily expected to make that much of a difference. So well done to Ben Keys. I always want to call him Terry Keys. Remember the Collingwood and Richmond prodigy? I think he played senior footy at a particularly early age, but no relation, I don't think. But yeah, good work by Ben Keys. Yeah, a little bit. I thought you might be talking about the highlighted hair because I think Terry Keys had a bit of that going too. Gold Coast, they need a few breaks. They also need to start jagging some of those games that are in the balance late in the piece because they do seem to end up on the wrong side of the ledger for both of them. You mentioned Adelaide taking on North Melbourne. They should be rightly confident of securing their third win from the first four games. And the Suns, interesting one for them on Saturday evening at Metricon Stadium. They'll be taking on Carlton, who got their first win of the season up on Sunday afternoon. So the Gold Coast, it's been a little bit reversed for the Suns. They haven't necessarily got the flying start we've come to expect from them in recent years. Maybe it'll turn around completely and they'll end up having a very solid season and getting wins on the board instead of falling away, as has become their norm. But their depth is going to be sorely tested, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's standing up. It's being tested at the moment. So they're hanging in there. And we've seen development. I really like how Bose is looking. The coaches was great. It's been a slow burn, but I think this is the year they do step out of the shadows and, for me at least, become, if not a serious contender for the eight, a very tough opponent, home or away.
Yeah, well, it was a cracking game and they are two sides that are heading in the right direction, at least in developmental terms. That was the Good Friday doubleheader. Three games played on the Saturday. Time to talk about them. Saturday afternoon at the MCG saw Richmond taking on Sydney and in the immortal words of commentator Mike Williamson-Finey, I tipped this. I'll stop banging on the Sydney drum soon, but I am quite excited about it. It's a good feeling when you predict someone to emerge from nowhere to a much more favourable position. And, boy, people are starting to talk the Swans up now. And why not? They are playing some scintillating footy and they certainly had their best face on show against the reigning Premier. Ended up with a convincing 45-point win, believe it or not. Sydney against Richmond, 17-15, 117, 45-point victors over the Tigers, 10-12-72. The goal kickers, four goals to Tom Papley, three to young Sam Wicks, two to Heaney, two to Hickey, two to Logan McDonald, two to Chad Warner, singles to Parker and McLean. Four for Tigers, three goals to Lynch, two to Castagna, two to Rioli, singles to Riewoldt, Edwards and Arts. Finey, you were there. I was watching it on the box. They started well, the Swans, and they never let up. In fact, an 8-goal second term gave them a commanding 40-point lead, even by half-time, and they certainly held firm thereafter. It was an absolutely magnificent performance from them.
Shit, it was hot. I have never been as hot at the football as I was watching that game. I was in the sun on the bottom tier, ground level with my daughter, 32 degrees. It really felt like the cricket. But I've got to say, except for the last 7 or so, 8 minutes of the second quarter where Sydney got the right return for their efforts, for the rest of the game, they were unlucky not to have been pouring more pain on the Tigers. Richmond had actually kicked 2 goals in the mid part of the second quarter to get within 10 points. And you sort of thought, okay, they're not playing well, but they're going to be within, you know, touching distance. This will be a bit of a test for the Swans. At that point, Sydney's clearance work out of the middle was captivating. Josh Kennedy getting it out and balled in the hands of a like of Warner, just, you know, pick up, kick goal from 60, no problems. Wicks damaging. There's options aplenty. Errol Goulden is fantastic. McDonald, he roamed far and wide. He didn't quite have his kicking boots on, but he's a super forward. And remember, there was no Buddy. They've got to be careful when he comes back that they don't become Buddy conscious, because they don't need to be. Now, did the 45-point margin reflect the game? Not really. They hit the post 6 times. Then again, Richmond hit it 3 times. I observed that they were using a magnetic ball on metal posts at one point. But they really, except for the last sort of junk time quarter, they completely massacred Richmond by numbers to the ball, by pressuring Richmond. Richmond uncharacteristically poor in disposal, and by dominating the centre clearance, which to me is great currency in football. And this is so sustainable. Why is it sustainable? Have a look who can't make their team, Rowan. It's staggering. You know, Buddy wasn't there, but Haywood can't get a look in. Sinclair can't get a look in. But your man, Matthew Ling, highly rated, can't get a look in, and others. Wow, this is a team to really not worry about for the future. If you want to be a flag, if you want to win the flag this year, worry about them this year.
I think the other aspect to this too, I mean, we're all captivated by the young guys, and rightly so, but I think the other thing that's happening is the mainstays of this side are all playing great footy as well. Plus, this move of Callum Mills to the midfield, I mean, he racked up 31 disposals in that game. Ollie Florent, he's been around for a while now. He was terrific with 29. But Lloyd, Parker, Kennedy, they were all high 20s disposals. Jordan Dawson, who has been a good player for at least 3 years now, he ended up with 27. You know, they've got prolific ball winners all over the place. And it's like they've bought the strongest elements of their game and their strongest performers from the last few years into play, along with this injection of young talent. It's just it's an intoxicating blend. I'm drunk on the aroma of the Sydney Swans. And what about the transformation in the brand of football they play? Look, I mean, people do overdo the dourness of their football, but there's no doubt it is quite a contrast to the sort of run and carry game we're seeing now. And that's hats off to John Longmire. I can't think of too many teams that have played as dramatically different a brand of football under the same coach. That takes a lot of flexibility on the part of a coach who's been in the Cape for a long time. So credit to him as well. It's just all coming together brilliantly for them. And geez, I hope they keep it up, because they, look, there's some good stories around this season, but for me at the moment, they are the best story. A quick word on the Tigers. Any
cause for one other thing on the Swans, Rowan.
Yep.
All those things you said are right, and high draft picks brilliantly used, yes. How about a ruckman at his fourth club finally getting the mantle and responsibility of rucking on his own? He's at the moment, probably with Nat Nui, the most effective ruckman in the comp.
Tom Hickey, you're talking about, of course, and he has been superb. Yeah, creeping forward to kick some goals even as well. So credit to him. Quick word on the Tigers. Any cause for concern there?
No, they lost this corresponding game to Hawthorn last year, didn't they, round 3? Dylan Shield was a loss early. And this is a team that they were never desperate to get back into the game. It was sort of a bridge too far in 32 degrees heat. Believe me, if it was a final or if for a spot in the top four, they would have pulled out some stops. Don't worry about them. Worry about the next team you're about to talk about.
Well, I'll tell you what, they certainly don't have it easy next week on the rebound, the Tigers, because they take on Port Adelaide. Of course, that epic preliminary final last year, we see a rematch at the same venue too, Adelaide Oval. That's on Friday evening. So that'll be a cracker. Both teams coming off defeats. And Sydney take on Essendon at the SCG on Thursday evening at 7:20. And that game takes on a slightly different complexion too after the events involving the Essendon Football Club on Saturday afternoon. And let's talk about those right now. Well, 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 not often I am completely flabbergasted at the turn of events in a football game, but my flabber was well and truly gassed at this game Friday. I was sitting in the outer, got to say, I did enjoy it, but boy, I certainly wasn't expecting it. An absolute crushing win to my Bombers over your Saints by an amazing margin of 75 points. The final score is 22-11, 143, defeating St Kilda 9-14-68. The goals, 5 goals to Cale Hooker, 4 to Jake Stringer, 3 to McDonald Tippenwoody, 2 to Snelling, 2 to debutant Alec Waterman, 2 to Harry Jones, singles to Cox, Redman, McGrath and Smith. For the Saints, 3 to Jack Higgins, who battled on pretty hard, I thought, for your side. 2 to Billings, singles to Membry, Crouch, Steele and King. And I've got to say, even in Essendon's better performances in recent years, there's always been periods where, you know, the other side comes back or Essendon put the cue in the rack. But this was just 4 quarters of relentless pressure and 4 quarters of relentless dominance. 6 goals to 3 in the first term, 6 goals to 1 in the second term, 4-2 in the third term, another 6 goals to 3 in the last. If you're a Bombers supporter, it just got better and better. Their pressure was good. Their movement of the ball was terrific. They backed themselves. They had potent targets up forward. Stringer makes such a difference to that side, just around the middle of the ground and near goal too. You can just see their confidence rise as soon as they kicked the first couple of goals of the game. Really good signs from the kids. Archie Perkins, God, he showed a couple of terrific flashes. He's going to be a really good player. Nick Cox, a couple of deft little moves from him. Incredible mobility for a guy of his size. Harry Jones finally getting his long-awaited first goal after a few misses in the first two games. Great stories everywhere for the Bombers. Alternately, Finey, and I should let you address this, pretty disappointing performance from your mob. A few guys who just didn't seem that committed to proceedings on the afternoon. How'd you see this game?
Well, it was dismal for St Kilda. There's an old saying in football, it's probably not, you know, the football club, things are probably, you know, after a game like this, aren't as good as it appears from Essendon's perspective. Football can't be that easy. They were just magnificent. From their first possession, they owned the corridor and they sliced every kick through the St Kilda, whatever defensive tactics they had. They just were hitting chests from 50 metres away, dancing past St Kilda players. They're not that good and footy's not that easy. And for St Kilda, they're not that bad and surely they can't be that the loss to Melbourne was disappointing, but it came after a very good win against GWS, and this came out of nowhere. It was terrible. The back line was completely shot to bits. Caulfield, so good last year, was a deer in the headlights. It's very sad. Gresham's a very good player. He's done his Achilles and out for the year. That's bad luck after his year last year. One thing is glaringly obvious, Rowan. St Kilda last year benefited greatly from a very strong ruck duo of Marshall and Ryder. Both aren't playing and they're suffering as a result. McKernan couldn't get his timing right, giving away free kicks, dominated in the ruck. And Smith was fantastic. I thought, actually, the architect early was Darcy Parrish. Outstanding through the middle of the ground. Simply outstanding. Essendon had players. Nick Hines was great. How about that rundown of Billings?
Yeah.
That was fantastic. It wasn't match winning because Essendon had won the match already, really. But it snuffed out any sort of belief. And that was great by Nick Hind. Look, why shouldn't Essendon fans be excited? They might not be that good, but I tell you what, their three youngsters, Perkins, Cox and Jones, they are great, great size, great movers, great future, very exciting.
Well, I hope they certainly stick by them. You're right about Parrish. I thought easily his best game for Essendon, and not the first time this has come up, but he played decent midfield minutes. That's what he is. He likes the hard ball. That's what he thrives on. And he won plenty of it. I think 34 touches in the end. So surely he stays midfield now, regardless of when the likes of Dylan Scheel or Dyson Heppel or whoever come back into that lineup. Just on St Kilda's ruck situation, Marshall played a VFL practice game, apparently got through that okay. Ryder, I think, is now back on deck, so he'll need a bit of match practice, you'd think. But, yeah, you're right, the ruck was a real issue for the Saints. Hasn't been a great start to the season for them at all. That win against GWS doesn't look quite as good now as it did after the first round, and disappointing since. Are you starting to worry about whether they can recover, Finney?
Well, we'll see how they respond to it. Isn't it amazing that their last three games at their beloved Marvel Stadium, this disaster, the game against Melbourne, and then go back to that shocking loss to North Melbourne at the start of last year when they were well up and threw the game in the bin. Actually, they might have had another game there.
Yeah, they beat Carlton there subsequent to that.
You're right. But I'm only thinking of the losses. Well, there's a home handyman hint from the St Kilda team on the weekend. Do you know what it is?
What?
If you're building a premiership team, use steel, not wood.
Yes. Yeah, it wasn't conspicuous, Mason Wood. It doesn't get a lot easier for them in their attempt to bounce back because they have none other than West Coast next Saturday, also a twilight fixture, and also at Marvel Stadium. So that becomes a real must-win affair for them. Essendon.
Rowan, after that, they've got Richmond and Port.
Okay, so it gets tougher still. And as I said, Essendon taking on the Swans at the SCG on Thursday evening at 7:20. So that was the Saturday twilight game and definitely a shock result. The next game we're going to talk about, not such a shock result, but certainly a domination the sorts we weren't expecting. Let's have a chat about that one. Well, this was clearly the match of the round in terms of where these sides are at and popularly expected to perform this year. But it was pretty one-sided, really, in the finish, and it was the home team emerging on top. West Coast, 37-point winners over Port Adelaide, 16 goals, 12, 108, defeating the Power, 11, 5, 71. The win set up with a 5-1 opening term and repeating that dose, 5-1 in the second quarter. So 8+ at halftime, pretty much done and dusted there. And Port actually ended up winning the last two quarters. So it didn't completely throw them a towel, but the result effectively done and dusted by the long break. The goal kickers, 4 to Kennedy, 3 to Darling, 2 to Cripps, 2 to Ryan, singles to Allen, Brander, Kelly, Petrocelli, geez, quick, and Sheed. And for Port Adelaide, 3 to Gray, 3 to Marshall, 2 to Fantasia, 2 to Georgiadis, and 1 to Wee Willem Finey.
Willem who?
Willem Drew. And yep. Always good to get that gag in. Disappointing by Port, but I thought it probably this game said more about West Coast and what they're capable of. Of course, the qualifier there now is that I think their most important player, skipper Luke Shuey, unfortunately re-injuring a hamstring just as he was about to come off the ground, having played a terrific game. So a great performance, but tinged with a very large qualifier right at the end. Did you think this result said more about West Coast or Port Adelaide?
Oh, it was sobering, wasn't it? Luke Shuey, everything went right for West Coast and their fans. The long weekend, Liam Ryan, Flying Ryan took a specky. There were great goals. Cripps kicked a beauty. Nat Nui was on fire. It was party time there until Shuey came off. That was a real downer for the trip home. Have you ever seen a program called Outback Wrangler on TV?
I haven't.
It's good. It's this guy, Matt, and his two offsiders. They go in the outback and they take crocs out of rivers in the Northern Territory. And what they do is you jump on the back of a croc and then you quickly tape up his mouth with masking tape. If you don't subdue him quickly, you're in big trouble. That tail can kill you. But you get on them early and you absolutely quieten them. And West Coast snuffed Port Adelaide out halfway through that first quarter. And that says a lot about West Coast. They controlled the clearances. They were dangerous up forward and they repelled them down back. Now, by quarter time, the game was over, Rowan. That's a very serious opponent, masking tape over the mouth and ready for done and dusted. Now, I know it was over in the West, but this really sets, for me, West Coast up as, if not the team to beat, that they must surely now know what it takes to get into the top two, and heaven stop them after that, Rowan.
Well, I think it's been a while since we've seen every one of their big guns firing at once. The key to this game, for me, is if you look at a list of West Coast best on the evening, and it reads Shuey, Gaff, Kennedy, Nat Nui, Kelly, McGovern. Throw Redden in there, throw Darling in there, of course. He and Kennedy, seven goals between them. But then you've got Cripps, chips in with a couple of goals. You've got Liam Ryan. What about that mark, incidentally? Wow, what a fantastic player he is to watch play. I think he, after Dusty, I think I enjoy watching him more than any other player in the AFL. But when all those big guns fire, I always thought Tim Kelly, he didn't have a great debut season for him last year. I always thought he was going to have a significantly better season this season, having adjusted to his new surrounds, his new teammates, et cetera, et cetera. I think that's proving the case. McGovern, we sometimes forget how crucial he is to that back line. But it all came together as one. And when that happens, they are incredibly tough for anyone to beat, particularly at home. It's a good observation you make. I mean, Port has been outstanding all of last year and again so far this season. They were beaten by half time. I don't think many sides would be able to do that to Power. And I guess also by the same token, that's why we shouldn't worry too much about where the Power at. Do they have any cause for concern, do you think?
A little, because this is the upper climbs of the ladder that they'll be treading if they want to make the grand final. They may have to go back to the West and play West Coast in a final at that same ground. And that is, of course, for concern, because they will go there with all those doubts that were created in the first half last night. Yeah, I think it's a telling victory this early in the season.
Well, interesting fixtures ahead for both these sides. Of course, I mentioned before, Port Adelaide now taking on Richmond at home next Friday evening. So that will be an absolute cracker of a game. West Coast go on the road, headed to Melbourne to take on your Saints, Viney, in the Saturday twilight fixture. So, boy, that makes it tough for your Saints to bounce back given that sort of form shown by the Eagles. All right, that is the Saturday agenda. Two games played on the Sunday. Time to talk about them. Sunday afternoon at Marvel Stadium, Carlton taking on Fremantle. Of course, Carlton yet to register a win. Fremantle 1-1, really good win at home last week against GWS. Could they follow it up with an improved performance on the road after a pretty dismal display in round one against Melbourne? Well, the short answer to that question is no, they couldn't. They were just as bad, if not worse, and a convincing 45-point win to the Blues eventuated. 16-13, 109 Carlton, defeating Fremantle 9-10-64. The goal kickers, well, a big headline act for the Blues. Big Harry Mackay, 7 goals to Harry, and it could have been just about double figures. He missed a few. 2 goals to Cripps, much improved performance from the skipper. Singles to Betts, Curno, Fogarty, Murphy, Nunes, Silvani and Gibbons. 4 Fremantle, 2 to Walders, 2 to Tabiner, singles to Collier, Darcy, Frederick, Switkowski and Stefan Gyro. But pretty dismal stuff by the Dockers. They shone for all of 10 minutes. It was 3 goals apiece at quarter time. And then the Blues took over. 6 goals to 1 in the second term, 4 to 2 in the third, and then 3 goals each in the last when it was well and truly over. Really disappointing stuff from the Dockers away at the moment. Conversely, well, the commentators are getting pretty excited with the Blues finally. I've got to be honest here. I wasn't as impressed. I thought their pressure was very good. There's still something about Carlton's execution which worries me. They still seem to miss more than their share of targets and waste more than their share of scoring opportunities. Still, they've got the win on the board, and that will increase their confidence and maybe those skills that are still missing from the makeup can be acquired along the way. What'd you make of this one?
Look, Carlton are impressive if they can play Fremantle every week without their first 3 tall backmen, Fife, Lobb, and 10 other players. Now, Carlton did what they had to do. Fremantle were there till the sort of time on period of the first quarter. And then I think Carlton kicked 6 goals, 7 goals unanswered. During that period in the second quarter where they just owned the game, at the 20-minute mark of the second quarter, it was something like, or 15-minute mark, it was 15-1 inside entries, 7-0 centre clearances, around the ground clearances, 13-0. This was an absolute domination by Carlton to put the game to bed in the second quarter. And quite frankly, this is, you know, a result that they deserve. They've been okay for the first 2 weeks. They're better than Freo with that personnel drain. But Fremantle, even with a personnel drain, remain, after all of these years in the competition, the one side incapable of recreating what they do at home away. You know, I've spoken about this before, Rowan. I subscribe to a school of thought that says that they are so comfortable being local hometown heroes that their fans are happy just going to watch a win every second week. They don't really care what happens in between. It's more important to them as they go with their friends and their corporate tickets are organised and it's a big afternoon of purple this and, you know, anchor that and whatever. Get the win at home and season be damned. You know, to me, they have never overcome this self-congratulatory hoopla of winning at home and not caring enough when they're away.
Well, they also haven't overcome their dependence on their senior players, and the absence of Nat Fyfe and his influence over that side was painfully obvious. They really lacked anyone to sort of steady the ship when things started going awry. Conversely, Sam Walsh, geez, a terrific player. It's easy to forget that he's only in his third season of league footy, but he was fantastic for the Blues today, 37 disposals. Really important performance from Cripps, 34 touches, and a lot of discussion about his fitness and his health generally, but he dispelled any doubts today. That was a great game from him. And Lachie Fogarty from Geelong, you know, look, struggled for opportunity there, but he's really making every post a winner so far with the Blues. He ended up with 25 disposals. What happens with these sides over the coming few weeks? Well, the Blues, they have an interesting visit up to the Gold Coast to take on the Suns at Metricon Stadium. That will be a good test for them if they're serious about having top 8 aspirations. That is a game that they really need to win. Well, Fremantle, as you just ventured, they get to return to their nice cushy home and take on Hawthorn. So if they turn it around and put on a bit of a show against the Hawks, does the problem then repeat itself? They certainly need to end, I think, that cycle of good at home, bad away. Did you tip the Dockers to the eight, Finey?
No.
No, I didn't either. Plenty of people did. I just wonder if they'd be reconsidering that now. What about the Blues? Would you say categorically Carlton isn't good enough to make the eight?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, not quite good enough.
Yeah, I don't think they are either. I wouldn't say categorically, though. I like to give myself more of an out than you do. All right.
Question with the word categorical in it. I felt I had to answer it.
Yeah, no, fair enough. And I laud you for being true to the question that you were asked. Many wouldn't. Certainly not a political career in Canberra awaiting you. Second game on the Sunday agenda was up in Canberra, and it was GWS taking on Melbourne. Interesting game for both clubs. Let's have a chat about what happened there. And the Sunday action finished with a game in Canberra, the first of GWS's home games in Canberra. Of course, can't use their usual home venue during the Sydney Easter show. So they played Melbourne at Manuka Oval. And the result was a third win from three for the Demons. They have got off to a great start, and another tale of woe for the Giants. Not so much in their performance, which was fairly gallant in the circumstances, but a long catalogue of injury, which we think will probably affect them for some weeks to come, and which we will now tell you about after we give you the details. A 34-point win to the Demons, 15-12-102, defeating the Giants 11-2-68. The wash-up for the Demons, 4 goals to Keziah Pickett. What an excitement machine he is. 3 goals to Fritch, 2 to Gorn, singles to Brayshaw, Jackson, Jordan, Neil Bullen, Petrarca and Spargo. For the Giants, 5 goals to Toby Green. What a player he is, and he was heroic up in that forward line for GWS. 2 goals to Kelly, singles to Tom Green, Himmelberg, Hopper and O'Halloran. Well, they led pretty early, the Giants. They got off to a real flyer, actually, 4 of the first 5 goals of the game. But then injuries began to bite, and they did not abate for the duration of this game. They were still hanging in there. In fact, Toby Green kicked 2 goals within a minute of the start of the last quarter to get the margin down to just under a kick. But they ran out of rotations, ran out of fit bodies, and the Demons came home strongly with 5 of the last 6 goals of the game to win by 5 goals plus. And that catalogue of injury for the Giants. Skipper Stephen Canelio cannot take a trick. He has an ankle injury. We don't know just how serious it is yet. Hopefully not too bad. Former skipper Phil Davis, he hurt a calf. He will be missing for some time, you'd think. And Matt DeBoer, valuable stopper for them. He has torn a hamstring. So you think he's going to miss a few weeks as well. So it was a gallant performance, Finey, and they certainly were admirable in hanging on for as long as they could. But the story of this game, I think, is how good the Demons are looking at the start of 2021, and they were pretty impressive again.
No, look, 3 from 3, and they still are yet to add their tall timber down forward. Now, at the start of the season, we thought no Wiedemann, no Brown meant no go for Melbourne, but they have covered and prospered, and now those additions seem like cream on the cake, when prior to the start of the season, they seemed like absolutely essential, necessary parts if Melbourne were to make any challenge for the eight. What a position to be in, that they're now a luxury.
Yeah, well, I mean, what's reminiscent about 2018 for me is they've got that bevy of medium-sized goal kickers back. I mean, back then we had Petrarca and Melksham doing it. Since then, they've added 2 guys who I think are going to be really valuable for them. Bailey Fritch, I really rate him as a player. He just seems to be able to conjure goals time and time again. 3 for him today. And Cozzy Pickett, he just goes up in my estimation by the week. He is going to be a superstar, I reckon. He was exciting enough last week. He actually started this game quite slowly, but worked his way into it. And I think all his goals came in the second half, ended up with 4, couple of absolute rippers. His work in tight traffic is absolutely unbelievable. He's got a magnificent shimmy on him, that man. And he is the real spark at ground level in that forward line. Of course, skipper Max Gawn, his usual reliable self, absolutely dominating the ruck battles. And they're on ball division, which is always prolific. Prolific again, Petrarca, 29 disposals. Ed Langdon's been a great pickup for him as well. 27 touches for him today. Jaden Hunt, back to his best, I reckon, too. Valuable run off halfback. Jack Viney, strong performance from him, 25 and 23 touches for Angus Brayshaw. Of course, that's not to even mention the tandem down back of Stephen May, who had a very interesting duel with Toby Green. Bit of a different size matchup, that one. And Jake Lever, May and Lever working very well together. Well, just want to throw one to you, Finey, about the Giants. Where are they at? I mean, look, nothing shabby about their performance considering the obstacles up against them. But, boy, are they running out of fit and able personnel.
Rowan, they look pretty thin at the start of the season. You take Cameron out of the side, Aiden Corr, of course, went to North Melbourne. They've lost players consistently now for a number of seasons. And in the end, it has to tell. Their ruck gambit, Braden Pruce, never eventuated. He's going to miss most of the season. Now compounding with injuries, we're going to see players that are really underprepared for AFL football. The luxurious and gushing list that they once had, overflowing with top tens, it was an embarrassment almost, is a distant memory now, isn't it, Rowan? They are now looking to pluck kids ahead of time to make their AFL debut in the next week or so.
Oh, it certainly is, and more of a blue-collar veneer about them these days, I think. But, I mean, if you're going to lose three players with the list that they've got now, the last three you want to lose, arguably the three most important in terms of leadership, Callum Ward aside, that is Cornelio, De Boer and Davis. So there'll be some very anxious fingers crossed checking out how long the prognosis on all their injury returns are. Doesn't get any easy for them next week either. They take on Collingwood at the MCG next Saturday night at 7:25 p.m. And the Demons, well, tests don't get a lot tougher than this one, although at least they take the Cats on the MCG Sunday afternoon at 3:20. Great test as to just how far the Demons are going to go in 2021. That was the end of the Sunday action. Of course, Geelong Hawthorn to be played on Easter Monday. Like I said, off the top of the show, we will have a full review of that game in our Wednesday episode. But that by no means was the end of football action this weekend, because some finals going on in another very important competition, and I think we should talk about it. Okay, we've talked about round three in the men's competition, but AFLW, the finals have begun. First week of finals, two elimination affairs. Actually, I think they were called qualifying finals. I don't know why, because it was sudden death, and two teams effectively died. And those teams, sadly for them, were Fremantle and North Melbourne. North going down in a thriller to Collingwood. Fremantle not really looking like it much against Melbourne in their game. The upshot is that Collingwood will be heading north to take on Brisbane in one preliminary final. Melbourne, meanwhile, visits Adelaide to take on the ominous-looking Crows, both those games deciding the grand final combatants. Let's start with the first of the elimination finals played at Casey Fields, and a pretty convincing win, Finey, to the Demons, 5-10-40, defeating Fremantle 3-5. Gee, the Dockers' season turned sour after really setting the pace early. They lost to the Demons recently and lost again in this game. A strong breeze favouring one end, and it was Melbourne which really capitalised on that, particularly in the last quarter too, after Fremantle briefly launched a bit of a comeback in the third term. Melbourne dominated the play in the last quarter, couldn't put the score on the board. In fact, they had eight scoring shots, finally put the game beyond doubt and running out 17-point winners. They're on a roll too, the Demons, five wins in a row. Karen Paxman, She was acting captain in this game in lieu of Daisy Pierce's knee injury, and she was her usual tough, hard midfield self, 20 disposals for Paxman. And also Maddie Gay, who kicked the winning goal or sealing goal for the Demons. She was terrific for them as well with 19 disposals. They're looking pretty ominous, Melbourne. Adelaide's certainly going to have their work cut out for them, but really disappointing finish to the season for the Dockers, 40.
Yeah, disappointing the Dockers. They were the best team in the first part of the season, weren't they, Rowan? And their football at that point was irresistible. But unfortunately, slow starts. They were 0-2 at halftime in this knockout final. And even though they did come back on the win in the third quarter, the die was cast. As you said, Maddie Gay, fantastic for the Demons and sort of emblematic of Fremantle's loss of form. Their champion, Gemma Houghton, was running through the middle in the last quarter of Casey Fields and potentially, had she kept a handle on the ball, could have got them within a kick. The bounce that she took in the middle got away from her, and that was that sealing goal you mentioned, I think, of Maddie Gay's, that basically saw Demons onto bigger and better things next week. Look, they can beat Adelaide. They've beaten them here at Casey Fields. It'll be a great game, won't it? Adelaide look irresistible at home, but Melbourne have made a pretty stern stuff.
Yeah, look, just to give you an idea of the extent of Freo's downturn, they started this season 4-0 and lost 4 of their last 6 games, including the last 3. This, of course, on the heels of being undefeated last year, won all the home and away games and then a first final. But, of course, unfortunately, never got the chance to convert that into a premiership. And that missed opportunity, not of their own making, of course, blame coronavirus. That will be the cause for even more angst now. So a bit of soul-searching to be done by the Dockers. Melbourne, as you say, every chance against Adelaide next week. Well, the other semi-final played at Collingwood's Victoria Park was an absolute thriller. And each side had their periods of dominance. The Pies certainly had the better of things early. They had a 14-point lead up early in proceedings, but the Roos came charging back. And early in the last quarter, it was they who edged to a 14-point break. Kudos to the Magpies, though. They've been pretty consistent through this season, and they finished the stronger. Amazing goal kicked by Chloe Malloy in that last term, too. A snap which went high in the air, bounced, and then bounced virtually like a tennis ball up in the air and floating over the goal line. And that sealed the win for them. But only by 6 points in the finish, Collingwood 7-8-50, defeating North 7-2-44. Collingwood's midfield has been its ace in the pack all season and was so again. Brianna Davey, she's had an outstanding season, 31 disposals to her. Chloe Malloy up forward. Tani Brown, pretty dangerous up forward as well. The Roos haven't had a lot of luck in their short AFLW history, and almost got this result. Caitlin Ashmore, impressive for them. Bethany Lynch, Sophie Abatangelo, good for the Roos as well up forward. Ashley Riddell, 22 touches for her. And Jasmine Garner, 16 for her and a goal. But Collingwood, they've been higher on the ladder most of this season. And they've had an up and down sort of AFLW existence, but a real chance for them now to hit pay dirt, of course, having to overcome Brisbane in a preliminary final to do so. That'll be a great test for them, but one they are more than capable of passing. Finey, what'd you make of this game?
I'll tell you, he's very pleased that North Melbourne didn't win by a point, is Tani Brown. Do you think she did a David Roden?
What was that? Oh, kicked the wrong way, yes.
Grabbed the ball, stormed away, slammed it through for a, I think it was a point anyhow, but then realised she'd done it for the wrong team. Good play, though, Tani Brown. Brianna Davey was the difference. North looked like they were going to win that game early in the last quarter, but she's a superstar. She is an absolute midfield dominatrix in that competition, and I don't think that's the right word, but she is the dominator.
Probably not.
Doesn't matter. I'll stick with it. For want of a better term, she's a star. She is just a star.
The intriguing thing about next week's preliminary finals too is that their matchups that have been played recently, as you mentioned, Melbourne made short work of Adelaide when the Crows came here down at Casey Fields. That was a really dominant performance by the Demons. They were, I watched that whole game. They were terrific on that occasion. And a real thriller between Collingwood and Brisbane just a couple of weeks back. And Brisbane prevailed in that one. This one will be played on their home deck, where, in fact, that last game was supposed to be played but got switched because of the coronavirus. So some interesting subplots, and coaches of both teams will have some fair opportunity to do a bit of reconnaissance on the opponents, given that they've met recently. It really has been an outstanding AFLW season. I think both the first finals measured up, and the two preliminary finals next week should be absolute corkers. Really look forward to that. I'll tell you what else I'm looking forward to, Finey, because we're about to do it right now, and that's one of the cornerstones of the Footyology podcast, and that is the Rant Off.
On Footyology, the Rant Off.
Well, I thought of what I was going to rant about today, Finey, and it's a bittersweet rant for me. I've got conflicting emotions about the events of Saturday afternoon at Marvel Stadium. I think you might know what I'm alluding to, but I would like you to count me in if you will.
No, count yourself in on this one, you bastard.
Okay. 3, 2, 1, rant. I'm pissed off with Essendon, Finey. Yes, my own club. Remember that old duet Stevie Nicks did with Tom Petty, "Stop Dragging My Heart Around"? Well, that's the Bombers. Seriously, how is a devoted fan supposed to retain any sense of equilibrium in their lives when their footy club toys with their emotions the way the Bombers do with the Red and Black Army? In the space of 3 weeks already this season, we've been dragged up, down and up again. This isn't just an emotional roller coaster. It's an out-of-control elevator, which you just know is only going to end with an enormous thump and considerable pain. You want to be led down the garden path? Try an 8-goal second quarter against a bitter rival in Hawthorn, which gives you a 40-point lead, one which then evaporates in the blink of an eye before the inevitable heartbreaking loss by the narrowest of margins. You want utter desolation? Try yet another abject performance on an interstate road trip to Port Adelaide, where the game's effectively done and dusted in about 15 minutes before some all-too-late resistance and post-game preachings about at least we stopped it becoming a complete slaughter. And you want complete bewilderment? Try Saturday's shellacking of St Kilda with an undermanned side, more inexperienced than your team has fielded for 11 years, which somehow becomes your boys teaching a finalist from last year a football lesson. Look, don't get me wrong. It hasn't been often these past couple of decades I've got to enjoy my team dish out a 12-goal belting. But you need to be at least a little psychologically prepared for what your team is going to deliver. And I'd prepared beautifully for Saturday's game. Knowing we were going to be burnt to a crisp, I'd fine-tuned my exit plan. At about the 15-minute mark of the last term, with Essendon at least 10 goals down, I'd leave my seat in the stands, head downstairs to the car and be home about the same time the final siren sounded the end of the afternoon's torture. I'd have time to do some shopping, some chores, and bolt down some dinner before tuning into the night game. But all those carefully laid plans were scuppered simply because on this day, the Dons decided to turn up. Of course, I then had to hang around because who knows when I might actually again hear the club song played after the siren. All I could see around me was similarly bewildered Bomber fans, not knowing what the hell was going on. Is their team contending, pretending, rebuilding, topping up, foxing, lulling opponents into a false sense of security, or just downright taking the piss? Who really knows with Essendon anymore? Sure, there's genuine excitement provided by the likes of Nick Cox, Harry Jones, Archie Perkins and Nick Hine, but will Essendon fans be allowed to continue to cheer on their development, or will they be rested or held back or something for some ridiculous long-term vision that never gets realised? So next Thursday night, the Bombers take on the exciting young Swans, and the question again presents itself. Just which version of my team is going to front? Isn't there any way, along with all those endless emails the club sends out about discounted merchandise and Chief Executive Xavier Campbell giving keynote addresses to top-end members for $250 a pop, that they could at least send out a bulletin letting the fan base know if we should be getting excited or preparing ourselves for the worst? After 2 decades of the sort of mediocrity our club has made an art form of dishing up, Finey, I reckon it's about the least they could do.
Oh, That's like third world problems, winning by 75 point problems. Tell it to somebody who didn't lose by 75 points. Oh, well, that's life.
Yes. Yes, fair point. All right. Well, I won't let you dwell on that. I'm going to count you in now. 3, 2, 1, rant.
Football's a winter sport. Can you hear me? Winter sport? Certainly wasn't yesterday when Harper and I trudged off to the MCG to watch her Tigers get taught a football lesson by the Sydney Swans. It was a heck of a game, I think. I was, of course, taken down by heatstroke early in the first quarter, so I'm not quite 100% sure what actually did happen. Why did I have heatstroke halfway through the first quarter? Well, we live in walking distance to the game, and by the time I got to the front gates, I was hallucinating, seeing mirages of zinc-nosed men carrying Eskies filled with 24 cans of beer each into the first day of the test match. I didn't know where I was. MCG 1981 or MCG 2021? I'd obviously suffered, having to climb over that ridiculously steep footbridge to get to the MCG. Is that put there to make sure that smokers, the elderly and the unfit don't go to the football anymore? Anyhow, by the time I scaled Bridge Everest, I was done. Sweating like nobody's business. We've finally made it into the ground and were seated next to the Richmond cheer squad. Well, they were the cheer squad at the start of the game, but Swan's good showing and the weather turned them into puddles of incoherent fools by half time. They were nothing but an annoyance. At half time, Harper and I went to get a cold drink. My Coke had been pre-shaken for some reason, and when I opened it, it fizzed all over me, making the second half not only hot and unbearable, but also incredibly sticky. I went down into the bowels of the MCG for some cold water. No such luck. Queues of 30, 40 snaked out of the men's toilet. Surely not everybody needed to piss halfway through the third quarter. No, that wasn't what they were doing. Grown men were taking showers, head showers in the taps and sinks of the toilets at the MCG. It was so damn hot. By the time the game was over, I had suffered irreparable brain damage. Richmond had been thrashed, I thought. I'm not sure whether they were. I'm not sure whether I've recovered. Who did win that game, Rowan?
Well, it was a convincing win to the Swans, Finey. Yes, I think a lot of us can relate to the travails that go with a trip to the football and sitting in the outer. I decided to drive to Marvel Stadium. I got the train for round one. Stupidly thought, the crowd won't be that big, should be all right. Got there in plenty of time and then proceeded to sit in a queue that was no more than 100 metres short of the car park entrance for at least 35, 40 minutes. And when we got there, the guy directing the traffic said, I don't know what these guys are doing. They've decided to check all the boots again. Apparently, they hadn't done that the day before, which is pretty typical of Marvel Stadium security, because what you get one day, you're sure as hell not going to get the next. So I sympathise. It can be a bit of a logistical nightmare going to the footy these days. Very
now,
good.
Can I just say something? On a weekend horribilis for St Kilda supporter, it really was a shocker, and that very hot day at the footy, I did have a bit of a highlight on Saturday.
What was that?
Because I was listening to the Could Have Been Champions, who I really enjoy, and their Twitter topic was, he never did that for us, talking about Josh Bruce kicking 10 goals.
Ah, yes.
So I sent in my Twitter contribution of, he never did that for us. That being, every time I watch the 67 grand final and the brilliance of Billy Barrett, we know how great he was in that game, I was thinking to myself, he never did that for St Kilda. But I sent that in, and they very kindly not only read it out, but said it's a colleague in the media, and it's Finey, and we, you know, love his work and with Rowan. So, yeah, it was all very good.
Oh, nice, nice. How many games did Billy Barrett play for St Kilda?
Two.
Yeah, I didn't think it was that many.
He kicked four goals in his first game. St Kilda went down in Geelong and annihilated them. You know, 1971, Geelong were no good. So it was like 21-20 to 10-5 or something. But he was gone the week after. Alan Jeans was a pretty thorny character when he coached St Kilda, and he got rid of a lot of people that he didn't like. And he managed to get rid of Ian Stewart because of a difference of worldly outlook. Got Billy Barrett in for him, and he only lasted a fortnight. So, yeah, it cost us... I think Stewart might have been handy in the 71 grand final, given he won the Brownlow that year.
Correct. Good to see it. It hasn't weighed you down 50 years later. All right. That's enough for this episode. Quick plug to our sponsors, if you will, Finey.
Love it, Andrew's Hamburger. Love one now, actually. 144 Bridport Street, Albert Park. You know what? They also make a very good steak sandwich. I should mention that. And also West Point Properties, Nick Spartel's, great renovations and builds in the inner southeast Melbourne suburbs, Roko.
And thank you also to Stats Insider for the best sports data analysis in the business and everything on their website, free to use. Check it out, statsinsider.com.au. You can support us at the Acast supporter page, wherever you're listening to this podcast, or on our Patreon page. All contributions more than welcome. Become an official Footyology patron, and we're very grateful for your continued support. Final word from you, Finey.
After the game, Richmond-Sydney, whilst I was at the game, I did contact a good mate of mine and somebody you, I don't know if you've met him, but you like his work, mad Swans fan, so we met after the game. Rusty
from Electric Mary. Did you say g'day for me?
Yeah, you and I are going on the, hopefully you're free, 24th of this month, April. They're playing at the Corner Hotel Richmond. And we're going to be guests of Rusty as Electric Mary pounded out on the Saturday night. Hopefully, I said, me and you are going to go.
Oh, fantastic. Thank you very much. I will make sure I'm available. And if you want to hear some good head-banging foot thumping Oz pub rock and roll, make sure you check out Electric Mary. They are a great band. Check us out on our next Footyology podcast midweek. Hope your team had a good win. If they didn't, hope things turn around for them next round. We'll see you on Wednesday.